from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
The premier baseball show in Chicago, Hit and Run, with guest host Mike Esposito.
Pitch on the way, drilled to center field and deep. Back goes Perkins, back to the wall, it's got a chance, gone! 2-run home run, Michael Busch. F drives one in the air, deep right field, it's gone! In half, a 2-run homer to the Cubs bullpen. And the Cubs take a 5-3 lead. Fans standing all over American Family Field. And the 1-2 pitch. Swing and a miss, and the Cubs win the ball game. The Cubs win it. Hector Neris strikes out Bryce Turang. Some clutch pitching by the veteran Hector Neris. And this series is even at one victory apiece.
Luis Robert Jr. back at the wall. Adios! La Pantera! On the prowl! He ties the game here in the sixth inning.
1-2. Lifted in the air to left, going back is Jones, and it is gone! White Sox pouring it on here late. A 3-run shot by Corey Lee. His eighth of the season, and it's now a 10-3 lead. 2-2 from Anderson. Strike three. And the White Sox have won the series against the Rockies, winning game two, 11-3. Four home runs. What a power explosion.
It's Mike Esposito on 670 The Score.
And good morning, everybody. Welcome in. Hit and Run here on a Sunday morning on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. We are broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. Glad to be sitting in for Spiegs today. And yes, Chicago baseball fans, we are coming off of a Saturday in which both of your teams won. I don't know that that's happened yet this year. If it has, it hasn't happened a ton. But Cubs win yesterday 5-3. You heard highlights from right here on The Score and the Cubs radio network, Pat and Ron calling that. Some 2-run homers that helped yesterday. Michael Busch, Ian Happ for Happ. Quite a week as he hit 2 very important homers. We'll get to that as we move on with the show. But certainly yesterday, the game-winning home run for Ian Happ in the eighth inning yesterday up in Milwaukee. A much-needed win for the Cubs. As for the Sox, they have won 3 straight, including yesterday. Their first laugher in a while, 11-3 the final, and Colorado certainly one of the lower-end teams in baseball. We'll be generous there and call them that. But, hey, you got to beat the teams on your schedule. The Sox have won 3 in a row. And yesterday you heard NBC Sports Chicago, John Triffin, Steve Stone on the call there. 11-3, 4 home runs. Luis Roberts, a bit of a bomb, you could say, 470 feet, and Paul DeJong, Corey Lee, you heard all of that as we came in. Sean Sears, our wonderful producer, is here as well, and we have a great show coming up for you today. We are here until 12:35. That is when Cubs Brewers comes your way. Zach will have the pregame show for you. It's the series finale in Milwaukee. Our pregame coverage, 12:35, first pitch at 1:10 on the Southwest Airlines Cubs radio network. Zach with the pre, Pat and Ron with the call of the game, as always. And the Cubs now 39-45, 10.5 games out in the division. So even after the win yesterday, the Cubs have dug themselves into a hole with their struggles of late, the last month or so. So they are 6 under .500, 10.5 back. They still are in last place in the Central, hopefully on the start of something good after yesterday for the Sox. 24-61, 30 games behind the Guardians, if you can believe that, this early in the season. As we stare at June 30th on our calendar,
But some positive signs for the White Sox. We're going to talk about all of that in the next 3.5 hours or so. We have a nice show planned out for you. We will talk Sox later this hour at 9:40 with Ryan McGuffey from NBC Sports Chicago. Talk about the 3-game winning streak. Talk about some trade rumors, which I am going to get to momentarily, which just came out this morning. We'll get to that with Guff at 9:40. At 10:30, Alex Cohen, the play-by-play voice for the Iowa Cubs, will join us talking prospects, talking potential trades as we approach the deadline next month. And we'll see what Alex knows and what he can share with us that's going on down at Iowa for the Cubs. 11 o'clock, we will talk some Brewers and some NL Central with Sparky Pfeiffer from 1250 The Fan up there in Milwaukee, host of Wisconsin Sports Daily. Talk Brewers, talk Cubs, talk NL Central, and rivalry stuff. And we heard lots of interesting sound yesterday. We'll get to that here momentarily. And then at noon, we wanted to bring some sound back from you because this is the guy of the morning, and it's actually a good transition to what we will talk about next. Garrett Crochet was on Inside the Clubhouse yesterday with Bruce Levine and David Haugh. Garrett Crochet, the subject of lots of trade rumors, the potential, and I will make a case for you, likely, maybe, American League starting pitcher in the All-Star game just based on numbers. Forget about the team's record. Forget about his one-loss record, which becomes less and less important as we go on here. But Garrett Crochet was on with Bruce and David. We will bring that back for you at noon, and again, we will toss it to Zach at 12:35 for the series finale from Milwaukee. Kyle Hendricks pitching for the Cubs today. Freddy Peralta for Milwaukee. But we'll get to the Cubs in a second. But let's start here with some trade rumors. And these coming directly today from USA Today and Bob Nightingale. Breaking news on 670 The Score presented by BetQL. Smarter bets start with BetQL. Download the BetQL app or visit BetQL.com today. This from Bob this morning, and it's about White Sox and trades. And Bob, as we know, has usually been very well plugged into the White Sox organization and what is going on there. What Bob has to say this morning. Garrett Crochet prominently featured. Luis Robert Jr. also. The Sox have had several teams, and I'm reading now from Bob's piece. The White Sox have had several teams contact them about Luis Robert Jr., but with his struggles, they're considering hanging on to him into at least the winter since he is under control through 2027. That's logical. That makes sense. You knew they weren't going to just trade Luis Robert just to trade Luis Robert. They're going to demand a high price, and while he is not exactly setting the house on fire, maybe yesterday was a kind of a kickstart, the long home run, 2 runs scored. He did strike out 3 times, but Luis Robert does have time to get back on track if the Sox hope to try to deal him here this year. The White Sox are said to be shopping Andrew Benintendi, and I don't know that how well that is going to go for them. But they are trying to shop Andrew Benintendi for what that's worth, per Bob Nightingale from USA Today. Today, Benintendi owed $50 million. I'm not even talking about this year, folks. Starting next year through 2027, so he's got $3 and $50 left after this season. And a quick check of Andrew Benintendi's stats. Yeah, he's still at 197. I'm going to guess that is not going to go so well for the White Sox, but we'll see what happens. Stranger things have happened, but I don't expect that. But here is the big news from the piece here about Garrett Crochet. And again, we'll listen into Bruce and David's Inside the Clubhouse interview with Garrett Crochet at noon today here on Hit and Run. The Chicago White Sox quietly engaged in brief contract extension talks with ace Garrett Crochet. That's news, but with no optimism towards reaching an agreement. And so the White Sox intend to trade him by the July 30th trade deadline. The White Sox have had 15 teams calling on Crochet. He is making just under $800,000 this year. He's under team control through 2026. The X factor for suitors will be determining just how much Crochet can help them in the pennant stretch and October. And this goes to his usage, his innings. We've heard Pedro Grifol talk about this. They want to limit how much he pitches. He's already pitched 94 and a third innings as a first-year starter, 21 more than his entire career total. Entering the season, the Sox and Crochet already have a firm plan in place to greatly limit his workload in the second half. And then this is an interesting nugget at the bottom of that. It's quite possible that a team acquiring Crochet may have to offer a contract extension for him to lift those innings restrictions because of the potential injury risk. So there's all sorts of stuff there, but it should be no surprise that the Sox are going to engage in trade talks with Crochet, because I'm racking my brain, and Sean Sears and I did this before the show. Maybe Dallas Keuchel would be about the only pitcher that I can recall that the Sox ever gave anything remotely close to a large contract to. Sean, do you come up with anything else?
That's the only one I could think of. Is Jose Contreras, like, is he count?
Maybe. Like, I mean, but that wasn't even, was that like a 3-year thing at that?
Yeah, well, that was really just seen as like a reclamation project.
Correct. And he was a heck of a lot older. So Crochet, the thinking is, and this goes to the history of the White Sox under the 40 plus years of Jerry Reinsdorf's ownership, they don't pay starting pitchers. They don't sign to big contracts starting pitchers. So Garrett Crochet, if you think about this, White Sox fans, and we'd love to hear from you, 312-644-6767. You could text us at the same number. Give us a ring if you'd like as well. And it's Mike Esposito in for Speaks today here on Hit and Run. Before the season started, and I remember when the news broke that Garrett Crochet was going to be the opening day starter, and everyone was like, whoa, because here's a guy who had never started for you before. Was a high draft pick, a first rounder, coming out of Tennessee. Certainly had all the tools, but had battled injury. So now here you are, 3 months later, and he is one of the best starting pitchers in the American League. And you have an opportunity, if you're the White Sox, to turn this into, let's call it, how many prospects, you know, the pot of gold, whatever you want to call it. But Garrett Crochet certainly will be one of the, if not the hottest name at the trade deadline that's available, certainly for starting pitching. He's got a 6-6 record. Forget about that. Because you think about the fact that the White Sox are 24-61, well, Garrett Crochet has 6 of those wins. And we joked about this the last time I did Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce a few weeks back. That if Crochet pitches, the Sox win, and if he doesn't, they don't. That was kind of the joke. That was the gist of the segment, but it's kind of close to that. His ERA is just a tad above 3. He has 130 strikeouts, second in the league. His whip is 0.94, and he is extremely affordable. I just read that piece from Nightingale. He's making $800,000, which in baseball terms is nothing. Sounds great to me, sounds great to you, but in baseball terms, it is nothing. He is under team control for another few years, so the Garrett Crochet hype train is about to start, and if it hasn't already, because he is going to be an extremely hot commodity. Half the league is already calling on the White Sox. So Sox fans, your thoughts on Crochet. Do you want to trade him, or would you rather re-engage in those contract talks? They started it. I can't imagine it went very far, because I'm sure the ask was very high based on what he has done so far this season. But it's interesting. And that's literally from this morning's USA Today. So we'll definitely talk more about that as we go along on the show, as the White Sox seemingly open for business, as you knew they would be. And I think that they have a lot. They could really do extremely well for themselves at this trade deadline. They have a lot of pieces that might not be superstar players. They might not be, well, Crochet is a front of the line rotation piece, but they have a lot of guys that would provide a lot of needs to contending teams. And this roster turnover, if you think there's been a ton of roster turnover already, it could be a heck of a lot more. It could be a third, another one-third turnover of this roster by the time the trade deadline is over. Because sitting at 24-61, and I had to double-check this, 30 games out behind the Guardians, this year is not going anywhere. And the opportunity now to really ignite this rebuild is there for Chris Getz and company. You've got Eric Fetty, too, who has been a nice signing, a nice deal. I have to admit, I didn't think a ton of it in the offseason. I knew who Fetty was. I saw his stats from Korea last year. But he has really been good. He's been good. He has certainly placed himself that two-year, $15 million contract. Again, sounds like a lot of money in baseball terms. Not really. Certainly not to contending baseball teams trying to win a division or a World Series this season. That's a very controllable or a very affordable controlled contract for the rest of this year and next for a guy who has been really good for the White Sox so far this year. Fetty 5-3, 3.23 ERA, a 1.14 whip, 91 strikeouts. He's been consistent, and he has really been a solid piece of the White Sox rotation. 312-644-6767 if you'd like to chime in. And we have John out in Logan Square who'd like to talk White Sox with us here on Hit and Run. Hey, John.
So first things first, when I look back a year at the Cubs, they were essentially in the same exact spot as they are right now. And that's the only thing giving me hope, because I'm not going to lie, after watching that second or third inning yesterday, I almost gave up. That was some of the worst baseball I've ever seen played. It was ugly. I'm throwing my TV off the balcony. They came back to beat Milwaukee, and it's the last string of hope that I have. I really need this team to turn it around, do it fast like they did last year. Otherwise, sell and stack up. I don't know what else to do.
Yeah, John, I think that is exactly what the Cubs are going to do, and we appreciate the call. The Cubs... And that's a good segue, even though I thought John wanted to talk about Garrett Crochet. That's what he said. So, but we'll take his Cubs thoughts, too, because that's a nice seg to what we want to talk about next, which is the Cubs and what happened yesterday. And we will play you something, because that third inning he talked about, we had some fielding stuff. We had some dugout stuff. And thankfully, we had some comeback stuff at the end of that game. We are also going to do, so I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick timeout here. When we come back, we're going to get into what happened in the third inning yesterday of the Cubs-Brewers win. We're also going to listen. Jed Hoyer talked the other day, the Cubs president of baseball operations, some interesting stuff to exactly what John was talking about the Cubs, where they sit now, and what they need to do before the deadline in order to make a run here and not be sellers. Hit and Run here on The Score. Mike Esposito in for Spiegs. We have a great show for you. We'll talk White Sox with Ryan McGuffey at 9:40. Cubs, as we just said, coming back with some Jed Hoyer tape and some dugout stuff from yesterday in Milwaukee. It's Hit and Run on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Here comes the 1-2 to Contreras. A pop fly, shallow center. Might be a tough chance going out. And coming in and dropping the ball is Crow Armstrong as a run scores. Unbelievable. Very tough chance with the infield in. The infielders, Swanson and Horner, had a long way to go out into shallow center. Crow Armstrong called it at the last second, made a sliding try, collided slightly with Horner as the ball hit his glove and hit the ground. Hard to believe what we're seeing in this inning. The ball game is... Here's a grounder back to the mound. They've got the runner in a rundown. Steele running him towards second. Now Horner running him toward third. And they don't get an out. Safe at third is Frelick. Monasterio goes to second. The Cubs just did not execute that properly. And the Brewers have runners at second and third with only one away.
And that was the third inning yesterday up in Milwaukee. And thankfully, the Cubs had come back to win the game. Highlights right here on the Score and the Cubs radio network. Some defensive miscues, although there were no errors charged on either of those plays. The Pete Crow Armstrong ball was given a hit to William Contreras. And Bryce Terang reached on a bunt single, according to the official score. Even though that we heard that was a botched rundown, as a 12U baseball coach, I felt like I was listening to my own game for my kids' team there. But that was not. That was the Cubs. And what we're going to talk about there is what happened with the Cubs yesterday. As they did win 5-3, they came from behind, and they initially... Actually, they had the lead, then they got tied again, and then Ian Happ ended it. Not a walk-off, but put the Cubs ahead for good with a two-run shot in the eighth. All of that in a second, but first I want to get to what happened after what we just heard there from Pat and Ron in the third inning. And again, this is Mike Esposito. It's Hit and Run in for Spiegs today. Spiegs has the day off. We are here till 12:35. Cubs baseball comes your way at that time. The series finale up in Milwaukee. So yesterday, after that third inning, Justin Steele, he still has no wins, by the way, here on June 30th, but that is certainly not his fault. He has been pitching phenomenally with an ERA around 2 over 6 starts in June. But Justin Steele, after that third inning, in the dugout, began screaming, quote, "Wake the bleep up." To no one in particular in the dugout, according to Paul Sullivan's article this morning in the Trib, but repeatedly screaming, "Wake the bleep up." Talking to himself, I'm sure. We just heard some of the rundown stuff. He was involved in that, but maybe getting a little fire, maybe getting a little inspiration, trying to be a little inspirational to his teammates. And Sean, I know you said, do we have any of the sound surrounding the aftermath of nothing on the TV broadcast, correct?
Nothing on the TV broadcast, but we do have our guys, Pat and Ron, reacting to that a little bit later in the broadcast.
Curveball is down low, but Ron, there was an incident involving Justin Steele. I'm not sure exactly when, maybe about an hour ago, somewhere around the second or third inning.
I think it was the fourth inning when this stuff happened. Yeah, okay. In that fourth inning, he came off the field.
And we just saw the replay of it. And he was very upset, excuse me, understandably.
Yeah.
The Cubs made some misplays and there were errors. And here comes the 2-1 pitch, popped up foul, out of play. And he was basically trying to fire up his teammates. Yeah. And I kind of like that.
No, absolutely. There comes a time, and I was talking on it last inning, there comes a time where you just had enough. And, you know, it just does. It boils over. And, you know, you play this game, and it's a hard game to play and all those things.
Fly ball left center deep. Back goes Happ with room near the track. The left fielder makes the catch. And that's out number 2. Go ahead, Ron.
Sometimes, you know, every athlete that plays at this level has that burn inside of you, that fight, that creates all that. And sometimes it just gets to the point where that's the end of it. I can't take it anymore, and we're going to fight back. And I think that's what you saw there from Justin Steele. He has been pitching his butt off here as of late. The last month, he hasn't had a bad outing. Does not have a win in the last month. And then things start going south against your rival team that's in first place. That's enough now. Mm-hmm. I've had enough. Mm-hmm. We're going to, you know, everybody has that boiling point. He boiled over, and that's good for him.
Pat and Ron always there for you right here on the Cubs Radio Network and 670 The Score. And Steele said afterwards, and I'm paraphrasing, you know, I kind of got to watch my language. I got, you know, kids watching me and relatives and whatnot, that he doesn't want to be that guy, you know, screaming and dropping F-bombs in the dugout. But, hey, it worked. It was, I don't want to say appropriate, but it was appropriate in a major league dugout setting, and just venting his frustration, especially as it turns out, they would win the game, right? So, but at the time...
Those were big plays, and that had helped them tie the game. But to Ron's point, and I'm just going to go very quickly, since May 27th, which was also against the Brewers, here's Steele's games. 7 innings, no earned runs. The Cubs lost that game 5-1. Saturday, June 1st, against the Reds, 5 innings, 1 earned run. The Cubs won that game, but Steele did not factor in the decision. Steele lost this game Friday, June 7th, against the Reds, 7 innings, 1 earned, but 3 total runs, thanks to errors, of course, and he took the loss in that one because the Cubs lost 3-2, as they did in his next start, which he pitched 6 shutout innings. But that was not good enough because he didn't take the loss, but the Cubs did because they lost 3-2. That one was Tampa. 2 earned in 6 2/3 against the Giants. That was a Cubs victory, but Steele, again, did not factor into it. The Cubs lost to the Giants in his next start, which was, whew, and we'll talk more about Monday night in San Francisco. That'll be for later in the show, but Monday night in San Francisco, he takes a no decision, 2 earned. He pitched into the 8th, 7 1/3. And the Cubs, as we know, or if you don't remember, I will bring it back to your memory, and you won't like it. But that was the 9th inning blow-up, 7 1/3, 2 earned. The Cubs lost that game, and then yesterday. So that's a really darn good, what is that, 7 starts for Justin Steele since May 27th. His ERA is down almost 1.5 in that time. He's pitched great. He's pitched 7-plus innings 3 of those times. He's pitched into the 6th all of those times. I mean, that's a run right there, folks. I mean, in today's baseball, that's a run. Let's hear from Ian Happ, the hero of yesterday's game.
After the 3rd inning, Justin kind of got emotional. Craig said it's obviously coming from a good place. And kind of, how did you read that moment?
Yeah, guy's competing, wants to win. You know, frustrated with, you know, how he's given up runs there in that situation, and you know, he's given everything he has out there. He's been really good. You know, I don't know how many starts in a row now, but he's been competing, going deep into games, and you know, that's raw emotion. Yeah, I mean, I think anything that is from the heart, and you know, somebody in the heat of competition, I think everybody sees how much he cares, how much he wants to win baseball games, and when he goes out there and competes, you know, it was nice to see.
So there's Ian Happ, the hero of yesterday's game, and Ian Happ, the Cubs and Cubs fans should thank Ian Happ for Thursday's win and for yesterday's win. Of course, others played a part, but hey, when you're struggling to score runs, a 2-run homer in the 8th or the 10th is certainly helpful. And on Thursday, the finale in San Francisco, which the Cubs had lost the first 3, into the 10th inning, the Cubs, Ian Happ with a 2-run shot, giving them a 5-3 margin. That would be the final, but Happ, game-winning RBI there. And then yesterday, almost the exact same scenario, except in the 8th inning and not the 10th. Happ, 2-run homer in the 8th yesterday, and we heard that coming into the show. So 2 huge hits for the Cubs left fielder. And those are the only 2 wins for the Cubs this week. And Ian Happ factored hugely in both of those, as we just described. But there he was talking about Justin Steele. And the text line, by the way, agrees with Ian Happ. 312-644-6767. If you would like to text us or call us, please do either way. At that number. But a texter suggests that the Cubs should show up today wearing t-shirts that say "Wake the Bleep Up." Bleep being my insertion there. Team building, use the energy to propel the rest of the year. I mean, listen, I'm sure the guys at Obvious Shirts would be very happy to make those shirts, and I guarantee you that they would get worn. So we'll see if the Cubs get on that. Another texter said the Steele outburst in that game kind of reminds me of what Hayward's speech did in 2016. I mean, albeit different circumstances, but I get what you're trying to say. A little bit less important than 2016, we'll say that. But this texter from 630 goes on to say, I don't mind that fire at all. I don't either. And in fact, Craig Counsell had talked the other day about how, you know, They don't really have that, although he kind of didn't think that was super important that they had, you know, Mr. Fire and Passion guy in the clubhouse, because they really don't have that. But Steele certainly provided that yesterday. And from the 331, how in God's name were the Cubs not charged with errors yesterday? That is a darn good question. I know the official scorers tend to, and they certainly won't tell you this, but they certainly tend to try to maybe give the home team hits. And I guess you could make a case for the PCA drop, whatever you want to call it, to be a hit because it was a tough play. But I don't know. That's a darn good question, 331 texter. And we'll have to page the official scorer at American Family Field there and see what we can figure out. I promised you Jed Hoyer tape. I promise you that we will get to that at the top of the 10 o'clock hour, because that's important. We definitely want to get to that as well. 630 texter. We will close this segment with this. Steele just said the same thing. The fans are yelling when they watch the game. Yes, that's true. Hey, we already talked to one of them. John and Logan Square said he was ready to throw his TV off the balcony in that third inning. So I'm glad John's TV survived. Glad we all survived yesterday's Cubs game. And hey, they won the game 5-3. We're going to talk White Sox next when we come back here on Hit and Run. Ryan McGuffey, our buddy from NBC Sports Chicago, will join us, and we will talk about the red hot Chicago White Sox. They have won 3 in a row. Guff will talk about that with us next. It's Mike Esposito. I'm in for Speegs today. It's Hit and Run on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We're back with more Hit and Run with Mike Esposito on 670 The Score.
I think it's impossible to fully put it out of your mind when you're not playing. When I'm playing, you know, and in my day-to-day routine, when I'm actually working out and stuff, it's pretty easy. But in the downtime is when it gets tough. And, you know, it's kind of just something that I say to myself, knowing that it's not in my control and that at the end of the day, whatever's supposed to happen is going to happen.
That's Garrett Crochet yesterday on Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haw talking about trade rumors. And guess what? We got some of those this morning from Bob Nightingale of USA Today. We are going to talk about that right now, as we head on out to the Score Hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. We are joined by the very talented and all everything Mr. White Sox, Ryan McGuffey from NBC Sports Chicago. Guff, good morning, my friend. Thank you for jumping on.
Hey, what's up, Espo? Happy to be here, man.
Glad to talk to you, and I'm sure you woke, as we did, to the Garrett Crochet trade rumors, and not surprising trade rumors, we should add, because it's been a not quite secret that this was likely to happen. But Bob Nightingale coming out this morning in USA Today and basically saying that not only are half the teams in the league contacting the White Sox about Crochet, but that this was a bit for me that the Sox quietly engaged in extension talks with him, but with no optimism towards reaching an agreement, which is sadly not a surprise to me.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that Chuck and I have been talking about on the podcast for a couple of weeks. You know, will he be traded? Won't he be traded? Should he be traded? Should he not be traded? I mean, look, like the way I see it, the two of the toughest things to find are a stud ace and a number three hitter gold glove center fielder. And you have that's the two things the White Sox have. And obviously the two gigantic commodities for around the league. This is all about timelines. That's all this is. Because a lot of, and I understand why fans and me included would be like, why would you get rid of Garrett Crochet? And that's a valid question. But you have to look at, after 2024, the 2 years of control Garrett Crochet has and what the plan is for the Chicago White Sox. And if the plan is not to contend, or you are on, it's not been labeled a rebuild, but I mean, if you look at the way this thing's shaping up, it looks like a rebuild. This is all about kind of the ships passing in the night and being on separate or being on parallel paths and not really meeting at the same time, because the timeline of Garrett Crochet doesn't really line up with when the White Sox next contention window might be. And that's why you try to go and extend him. That makes sense. And if there's no hope to extend him, you have to entertain trade offers. And knowing that it looks to be a lesser trade trade deadline in terms of the type of players that could be on the market, specifically pitchers, you know, Garrett Crochet is kind of the Pedro Grifol has said it. You know, he's kind of a unicorn in a sense that there's not a lot of Garrett Crochet stories out there where you have a guy that has 73 career innings pitched, never been a starter, and then is going to be an all-star and lead the American League in strikeouts. I mean, there's really not a book on how to handle something like this. And that's where if you're a team trading for Garrett Crochet, you have to obviously look at those innings and say, well, what can you give us in August, September, October? And that's why I think a team like the Dodgers, the Yankees, the Braves, teams that are already or the Phillies, teams that are already World Series favorites, do they make a play on a Garrett Crochet and say, look, this is a play for us to win the World Series now and tomorrow, knowing that he's got a lower salary in the next 2 years. So the White Sox should be asking for the farm. They should get that, I think, from a Garrett Crochet. And it's unfortunate because he's been such a great story, not just in Chicago, but in all of baseball. And I think it makes a lot of sense. If the White Sox do trade him, you can certainly see why.
Absolutely. No, and that's how I keep looking at this too, Guff, is you take your fan, sunglasses off and you just look logically at this. The Sox have the worst record in baseball. They are not in a contention window. This guy makes no money. He's had a wonderful first half. And you can get, as you said, and they should be asking for the, earth, sun, moon, and stars, and they will get that if they are able to deal him, and if assuming, health, of course, which knock on wood remains. But in a rebuild, and when you have 24 wins here on June 30th, I mean, this could really accelerate that rebuild, can it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, a lot of people are like, well, why would you want to trade Garrett Crochet? Because you're looking to get Garrett Crochet in return eventually. Well, yeah, that's what we're talking about with timelines here. I mean, if you can find a younger Garrett Crochet type, or, I mean, look, the White Sox, the hitting is where the Sox have a lot of promising pitchers. They really don't have much in the offense department. So if you can, I don't know if Luis Robert will be traded. Looking at Bob Nightingale's piece saying that, just the way he's performed with the 2 month injury, I really think put a dent in the idea of trading Luis Robert. Maybe that's something you look at in the offseason, but you need to rebuild that offensive cupboard because it's pretty bare and empty. But, looking at Crochet, this is what will be great to see. Like, who's going to play the desperate card first? Which team is going to say, okay, enough's enough. We have injuries, or we're in a race here. We need to get that guy so this other team doesn't get that guy, and we'll give you what you need in order to get that deal done. Because I think everybody's sitting here going, okay, we're a month from the deadline, and you're waiting. And this has been me too. I'm like, I'm waiting for the signs of fatigue from Garrett Crochet.
Mm-hmm.
And then each start he goes out there, he's doing something better than he did before. I mean, he looks stronger at this point in the season than he's looked at any other point. And, early in the season when he had that rough spot, it looked like, okay, well, this is going to be part of the rebuild that Garrett Crochet is learning to be a starter on the fly. And it's just not the case. He overcame that, and he's just been absolutely lights out, regardless of whoever team, whatever offense, where he's pitching, when he's pitching, it doesn't seem to matter. That's where if I were a team that was World Series or bust mentality, I would be lining up, because if that's what the goal is, and that's why I mentioned those big dogs at the top, mm-hmm. the Dodgers, the Yankees, the Braves, the Phillies, because you're not really, yes, you care about your prospects, but if it's World Series or bust mentality, you're willing to let go of 3-4 years from now in order to win the World Series now. I mean, look at especially the Dodgers, who've been chasing with the amount of money they spent, $1.2 billion in the offseason. I don't think they're worried about a 19, 20, 21-year-old kid or kids in order to get that done.
No, and Garrett Crochet's salary is a rounding error in their accounting books, I think, at this point, too. No, and I mean, listen, Baltimore is in first place in the East by a game. The Yankees, I mean, the nice thing with the wild card, and I guess you could see this both ways, is that almost everybody is still, they still have some hope or another. Obviously, your World Series favorites are pretty clear at this point, but there's tons of teams still in the mix here, which is why, actually, ironically, that you know, there are so few automatic sellers, and the White Sox are one of them, and that puts Crochet, you know, there's not starting pitching like this on that market.
Yeah, the Orioles, you know, like the Orioles are a great example. Last year, it made zero sense to me that they weren't calling for Dylan Cease at the deadline, knowing that they had the offense to get there. And then what happened in the playoffs? They didn't have pitching. They got swept, or what? They were in and out after a 100-win season. And you look at the Orioles and what Corbin Burnes has given them. Could you imagine pairing Garrett Crochet with Corbin Burnes? And whatever you get from Crochet, I mean, even if Garrett Crochet can give you two innings in the bullpen in October, that's nasty. So the Orioles would be a team. I mean, certainly from an offensive standpoint, their prospects and even guys at the major league level who have not quite busted out yet, you know, you're not going to get Jackson Holliday, but they have a loaded system, a loaded roster of young guys that I think would be very attractive. That's a team that could line up very well with the White Sox and Garrett Crochet. So it'll be like, that's what I'm talking about. Which team is going to say enough's enough, play the card? You know, AJ Preller of the Padres, he seems to be the guy who always is playing that card.
Always.
And
yep.
So they're probably a team that I know, you know, there's been some mentions of San Diego and Garrett Crochet lining up. And I just think that there's going to be an AJ Preller type that calls Chris Getz and says, I'm not hanging up the phone until we get the deal done. The question is when and who and what the White Sox will get in return, because it does seem, you know, you look at it, take away Bob's piece this morning, the momentum certainly seemed to be building towards this moment. And then you add in that piece this morning that kind of confirms that half the league's, look, I'd say more than 15 teams are interested in Garrett Crochet.
Right.
There's probably five that can actually line up and get the deal done. So the question is, over the next 4 weeks, who is that team?
Talking to Ryan McGuffey from NBC Sports Chicago here on Hit and Run on the Score. Espo in for Spiegs. Guff, and hey, the White Sox are hot. Let's call it right there. They've won three in a row. And listen, I kid a little bit, but it's nice to see the bats pop off yesterday. Luis Robert with the long bomb. And maybe, just maybe, I mean, he's been in a bit of a funk since coming back from injury. You mentioned it during your last answer. I think, you know, he's had a difficult time, or it was a long layoff, and now he's trying to get himself back into playing every day. But, you know, maybe this is a sign of some kind of resurgence for Robert, and certainly offensively it was nice to see the White Sox have one where they can kind of cruise control there at the end.
Yeah, I mean, we're getting a little bit of a taste. I mean, look, the Rockies are equally as awful.
Yes.
And the White Sox, from a talent standpoint, it's not a very talented roster. It's a top-heavy talent on the White Sox, but they're better than the Colorado Rockies. I mean, the Rockies are absolutely awful and going nowhere fast. And we've seen little bursts this weekend of what you thought the White Sox might be over the last couple of years. You know, the ability to put a bunch of runs on the board quick. I mean, would they have six in the eighth last night or yesterday?
Yep.
You know, you were just kind of waiting for it was 3-0, and it just felt like, okay, like this doesn't feel like the Colorado Rockies are putting anything away here. And then all of a sudden you're seeing, you know, it's homers from Robert. You're getting, you know, Paul DeJong, and then you get the sixth run. They're doing it in different ways too. You're not just seeing power. I mean, this team has lacked so much power over the last three seasons. They've been one of the worst power hitting teams in all of baseball. So I don't put too much stock into it. I know you're not either with it being the Rockies, but they haven't won four games in a row all year. So this is kind of a high watermark moment for the White Sox if they can get a sweep of the Colorado Rockies today after that 1-0 win in the makeup game on Thursday against Atlanta. So, you know, look, it is what it is. Like, they're not, it's nice to see wins. I'll say that.
Yes.
And there's some story, like Drew Thorpe pitching on Friday night.
Yep.
He's fun to watch. I mean, that guy looks like he's got the composure and makeup of a 30-year-old veteran. So there's some stories. Jonathan Cannon is a story. And obviously we talked about Crochet at length. I mean, there are some things to watch in a lost season here. And there'll be more. I think after the trade deadline and the White Sox move a lot of these pieces, you're going to see more of these guys from AA. You're going to see more of this, you know, these promising young guys that everybody's been talking about, Birmingham all year. So there are things to to be excited about, but they are a long way away from saying we're, you know, contending for a wild card spot.
Well, and two things off of your answer, because I had actually noted that too, to talk to you about, is that if nothing else, watching the young pitching is something. If you're a White Sox fan and you want to watch the games, and you obviously know that this year is not going anywhere, you can watch those games excitedly and watch Thorpe or Cannon or Fetty or Crochet or whomever. They have a number of those guys to trot out there. That is certainly stuff that you can build on for the future.
100%. I mean, and you might not always like the results. I mean, Jonathan Cannon goes, 8 2/3, almost throws a complete game shutout, and then follows it up with a clunker the next day, and people are like, here it is, one step forward, two steps back. I don't look at that at all. Keep running these guys out there. I mean, part of pitching into the ninth inning is learning how to maintain and build upon those starts, and we see it all the time. So, Nick Nastrini has not been as bright of a spot as you'd want him to be, maybe. But a lot of these guys are learning. People forget, that Lucas Giolito had a 6-something ERA and then turned it around, but he learned at the big league level. I think you're going to see a lot of that type of stuff here in the second half of the White Sox season. Like, after the trades, a lot of times you just kind of want to write these teams off and say, oh my gosh, there's nothing to watch. And I just don't think that's the case here. There's not a lot of the supporting cast isn't strong. I don't think the offense is going to give you much the rest of the year. But there are a lot of young arms, not just in the rotation to come, but in the bullpen too. I think you're going to see some guys probably be dealt in that bullpen to give other guys opportunities. You're going to see more of like the Jordan Leisures and the Jared Schusters. And while that might not be, sexy names right now, I think there's something there. And certainly from an every fifth day standpoint right now, Drew Thorpe is a guy I usually tweet it every time he pitches that, hey man, like, this guy's fun to watch. You can get locked in and watch him pitch. You know, that was his first start at home on Friday night, and he just was locked in. I mean, he was legit upset about giving up the 2-run homer, and he looked like he'd given up a 2-run homer in the ALCS the way he came off the mound and was dejected in the dugout. And the White Sox offense was able to respond and pick him up there. But, I mean, he had given up two hits, and one being a 2-run homer. And the way he responded, I love to see that. I love to see, like, that's the maturation of these young guys that we're going to see down the stretch. So I don't think it's, like, I don't think this is all lost, because I just think there are some stuff to watch. It's more about how the White Sox add and supplement and complement the rest of these guys as they go forward in this, rebuild 2.0 or whatever we're calling it.
Right. Yeah, well, one thing's for sure, Guffin, we really appreciate your time this morning here on Hit and Run. It's going to be a very interesting next month or so leading into the deadline, because I think you're going to see a ton of moves. That's my, just based on what's on this roster, but it's definitely going to be interesting, and we really appreciate you joining us.
I always love being on with you. I'll give you an over under 6.5 players moved. Where you like?
I'm taking the over. I'm going over
too.
On it.
I am too.
All right, Ryan. Thanks for joining us, Guff. Appreciate it.
Anytime.
All right, that's Ryan McGuffey, NBC Sports Chicago, and it's always great talking with Guff and great talking to White Sox with him. You can hear him here on The Score on occasion, filling in on any of the shows, but talking White Sox with him right now. And Sox fans, we will definitely get back to you as to what the White Sox are looking at here with the Garrett Crochet trade rumors, and Luis Robert was mentioned, and just the number of players that they have that are likely or very possibly to be dealt ahead of the trade deadline at the end of July. Coming up next, I promised you Jed Hoyer tape. I will give you Jed Hoyer tape from Milwaukee. It's Mike Esposito. I'm in for Spiegs. This is Hit and Run, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Play ball!
premier baseball show in Chicago, Hit and Run, with guest host Mike Esposito.
Pitch on the way, drilled to center field and deep. Back goes Perkins, back to the wall. It's got a chance. Gone! Two-run home run, Michael Busch. F drives one in the air, deep right field. It's gone. Ian Happ, a two-run homer to the Cubs bullpen. And the Cubs take a 5-3 lead. Fans standing all over American Family Field. And the 1-2 pitch. Swing and a miss, and the Cubs win the ball game. The Cubs win it. Hector Neris strikes out Bryce Turang. Some clutch pitching by the veteran Hector Neris. And this series is even at one victory apiece.
Luis Robert Jr. back at the wall. Adios! La Pantera! On the prowl! He ties the game here in the sixth inning.
1-2. Lifted in the air to left, going back is Jones, and it is gone!
White Sox pouring it on here late. A three-run shot by Corey Lee. His eighth of the season. And it's now a 10-3 lead. 2-2 from Anderson. Strike three. And the White Sox have won the series against the Rockies, winning game two, 11-3. Four home runs. What a power explosion.
It's Mike Esposito on 670 The Score.
And good morning, everybody. Welcome in. Hit and Run here on a Sunday morning on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. We are broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. Glad to be sitting in for Spiegs today. And yes, Chicago baseball fans, we are coming off of a Saturday in which both of your teams won. I don't know that that's happened yet this year. If it has, it hasn't happened a ton. But Cubs win yesterday 5-3. You heard highlights from right here on The Score and the Cubs radio network, Pat and Ron calling that. Some two-run homers that helped yesterday, Michael Busch, Ian Happ for Happ. Quite a week as he hit two very important homers. We'll get to that as we move on with the show, but certainly yesterday the game-winning home run for Ian Happ in the eighth inning yesterday up in Milwaukee, a much-needed win for the Cubs. As for the Sox, they have won three straight, including yesterday. Their first laugher in a while, 11-3 the final, and Colorado certainly one of the lower-end teams in baseball. We'll be generous there and call them that. But, hey, you got to beat the teams on your schedule. The Sox have won three in a row. And yesterday you heard NBC Sports Chicago, John Triffin, Steve Stone on the call there. 11-3, four home runs. Luis Roberts, a bit of a bomb, you could say, 470 feet. And Paul DeJong, Corey Lee, you heard all of that as we came in. Sean Sears, our wonderful producer, is here as well. And we have a great show coming up for you today. We are here until 12:35. That is when Cubs Brewers comes your way. Zach will have the pregame show for you. It's the series finale in Milwaukee. Our pregame coverage, 12:35, first pitch at 1:10 on the Southwest Airlines Cubs Radio Network. Zach with the pre, Pat and Ron with the call of the game, as always. And the Cubs now 39-45, 10.5 games out in the division. So even after the win yesterday, the Cubs have dug themselves into a hole with their struggles of late, the last month or so. So they are 6 under .500, 10.5 back. They still are in last place in the Central, hopefully on the start of something good after yesterday for the Sox. 24-61, 30 games behind the Guardians, if you can believe that, this early in the season as we stare at June 30th on our calendar. But some positive signs for the White Sox. We're going to talk about all of that in the next 3.5 hours or so. We have a nice show planned out for you. We will talk Sox later this hour at 9:40 with Ryan McGuffey from NBC Sports Chicago. Talk about the three-game winning streak. Talk about some trade rumors, which I am going to get to momentarily, which just came out this morning. We'll get to that with Guff at 9:40. At 10:30, Alex Cohen, the play-by-play voice for the Iowa Cubs, will join us.
talking prospects, talking potential trades as we approach the deadline next month. And we'll see what Alex knows and what he can share with us that's going on down at Iowa for the Cubs. 11 o'clock, we will talk some Brewers and some NL Central with Sparky Pfeiffer from 1250 The Fan up there in Milwaukee, host of Wisconsin Sports Daily. Talk Brewers, talk Cubs, talk NL Central, and rivalry stuff. And we heard lots of interesting sound yesterday. We'll get to that here momentarily. And then at noon, we wanted to bring some sound back from you because this is the guy of the morning, and it's actually a good transition to what we will talk about next. Garrett Crochet was on Inside the Clubhouse yesterday with Bruce Levine and David Haw. Garrett Crochet, the subject of lots of trade rumors, the potential, and I will make a case for you, likely, maybe, American League starting pitcher in the All-Star game just based on numbers. Forget about the team's record. Forget about his one-loss record, which becomes less and less important as we go on here. But Garrett Crochet was on with Bruce and David. We will bring that back for you at noon. And again, we will toss it to Zach at 12:35 for the series finale from Milwaukee. Kyle Hendricks pitching for the Cubs today. Freddy Peralta for Milwaukee. But we'll get to the Cubs in a second. But let's start here with some trade rumors. And these coming directly today from USA Today and Bob Nightingale. Breaking news on 670 The Score, presented by BetQL. Smarter bets start with BetQL. Download the BetQL app or visit BetQL.com today. This from Bob this morning, and it's about White Sox and trades. And Bob, as we know, has usually been very well plugged into the White Sox organization and what is going on there. What Bob has to say this morning. Garrett Crochet, prominently featured. Luis Robert Jr. also, the Sox have had several teams, and I'm reading now from Bob's piece, the White Sox have had several teams contact them about Luis Robert Jr., but with his struggles, they're considering hanging on to him into at least the winter since he is under control through 2027. That's logical. That makes sense. You knew they weren't going to just trade Luis Robert just to trade Luis Robert. They're going to demand a high price, and while he is not exactly setting the house on fire, maybe yesterday was a kind of a kickstart, the long home run, two runs scored. He did strike out three times, but Luis Robert does have time to get back on track if the Sox hope to try to deal him here this year. The White Sox are said to be shopping Andrew Benintendi, and I don't know that how well that is going to go for them. But they are trying to shop Andrew Benintendi for what that's worth, per Bob Nightingale from USA Today. Today, Benintendi owed $50 million. I'm not even talking about this year, folks. Starting next year through 2027. So he's got $3.50 left after this season. And a quick check of Andrew Benintendi's stats. Yeah, he's still at 197. I'm going to guess that is not going to go so well for the White Sox, but we'll see what happens. Stranger things have happened, but I don't expect that. But here is the big news from the piece here about Garrett Crochet. And again, we'll listen in to Bruce and David's Inside the Clubhouse interview with Garrett Crochet at noon today here on Hit and Run. The Chicago White Sox quietly engaged in brief contract extension talks with ace Garrett Crochet. That's news. But with no optimism towards reaching an agreement. And so, the White Sox intend to trade him by the July 30th trade deadline. The White Sox have had 15 teams calling on Crochet. He is making just under $800,000 this year. He's under team control through 2026. The X factor for suitors will be determining just how much Crochet can help them in the pennant stretch and October. And this goes to his usage, his innings. We've heard Pedro Grifol talk about this. They want to limit how much he pitches. He's already pitched 94 and a third innings as a first-year starter, 21 more than his entire career total. Entering the season, the Sox and Crochet already have a firm plan in place to greatly limit his workload in the second half. And then this is an interesting nugget at the bottom of that. It's quite possible that a team acquiring Crochet may have to offer a contract extension for him to lift those innings restrictions because of the potential injury risk. So there's all sorts of stuff there, but it should be no surprise that the Sox are going to engage in trade talks with Crochet, because I'm racking my brain, and Sean Sears and I did this before the show. Maybe Dallas Keuchel would be about the only pitcher that I can recall that the Sox ever gave anything remotely close to a large contract to. Sean, do you come up with anything else?
That's the only one I could think of. Jose Contreras, like, is he count? Kinda?
Maybe. Like, I mean, but that wasn't even, was that like a 3-year thing at that?
Yeah, well, it really just seen as like a reclamation project.
Correct. And that was, and he was a heck of a lot older. So Crochet, the thinking is, and this goes to the history of the White Sox under the 40 plus years of Jerry Reinsdorf's ownership, they don't pay starting pitchers. They don't sign to big contracts starting pitchers. So Garrett Crochet, if you think about this, White Sox fans, and we'd love to hear from you, 312-644-6767. You could text us at the same number. Give us a ring if you'd like as well. And it's Mike Esposito in for Spiegs today here on Hit and Run. Before the season started, and I remember when the news broke that Garrett Crochet was going to be the opening day starter, and everyone was like, whoa, because here's a guy who had never started for you before, was a high draft pick, a first rounder coming out of Tennessee, certainly had all the tools, but had battled injury. So now here you are 3 months later, and he is one of the best starting pitchers in the American League. And you have an opportunity, if you're the White Sox, to turn this into, let's call it how many prospects, you know, the pot of gold, whatever you want to call it. But Garrett Crochet certainly will be one of the, if not the hottest name at the trade deadline that's available, certainly for starting pitching. He's got a 6-6 record. Forget about that. Because if you think about the fact that the White Sox are 24-61, well, Garrett Crochet has 6 of those wins. And we joked about this the last time I did Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce a few weeks back, that if Crochet pitches, the Sox win, and if he doesn't, they don't. That was kind of the joke. That was the gist of the segment, but it's kind of close to that. His ERA is just a tad above 3. He has 130 strikeouts, second in the league. His whip is 0.94, and he is extremely affordable. I just read that piece from Nightingale. He's making $800,000, which in baseball terms is nothing. Sounds great to me, sounds great to you, but in baseball terms, it is nothing. He is under team control for another few years, so the Garrett Crochet hype train is about to start, and if it hasn't already, because he is going to be an extremely hot commodity. Half the league is already calling on the White Sox. So Sox fans, your thoughts on Crochet. Do you want to trade him, or would you rather re-engage in those contract talks? They started it. I can't imagine it went very far, because I'm sure the ask was very high based on what he has done so far this season. But it's interesting. And that's literally from this morning's USA Today. So we'll definitely talk more about that as we go along on the show, as the White Sox seemingly open for business, as you knew they would be. And I think that they have a lot. They could really do extremely well for themselves at this trade deadline. They have a lot of pieces that might not be superstar players. They might not be, well, Crochet is a front of the line rotation piece, but they have a lot of guys that would provide a lot of needs to contending teams. And this roster turnover, if you think there's been a ton of roster turnover already, it could be a heck of a lot more. It could be another one-third turnover of this roster by the time the trade deadline is over. Because sitting at 24-61, and I had to double-check this, 30 games out behind the Guardians, this year is not going anywhere. And the the opportunity now to really ignite this rebuild is there for Chris Getz and company. You've got Eric Fetty, too, who has been a nice signing, a nice deal. I have to admit, I didn't think a ton of it in the offseason. I knew who Fetty was. I saw his stats from Korea last year. But he has really been good. He's been good. He has certainly placed himself that two-year, $15 million contract. Again, sounds like a lot of money in baseball terms. Not really. Certainly not to contending baseball teams trying to win a division or a World Series this season. That's a very controllable or a very affordable controlled contract for the rest of this year and next for a guy who has been really good for the White Sox so far this year. Fetty 5-3, 3.23 ERA, a 1.14 WHIP, 91 strikeouts. He's been consistent, and he has really been a solid piece of the White Sox rotation. 312-644-6767 if you'd like to chime in. And we have John out in Logan Square who'd like to talk White Sox with us here on Hit and Run. Hey, John.
So first things first, when I look back a year at the Cubs, they were essentially in the same exact spot as they are right now. And that's the only thing giving me hope, because I'm not going to lie, after watching that second or third inning yesterday, I almost gave up. That was some of the worst baseball I've ever seen played. It was ugly. I'm throwing my TV off the balcony. They came back to beat Milwaukee, and it's the last string of hope that I have. I really need this team to turn it around, do it fast like they did last year. Otherwise, sell and stack up. I don't know what else to do.
Yeah, John, I think that is exactly what the Cubs are going to do, and we appreciate the call. The Cubs... And that's a good segue, even though I thought John wanted to talk about Garrett Crochet. That's what he said. So, but we'll take his Cubs thoughts, too, because that's a nice seg to what we want to talk about next, which is the Cubs and what happened yesterday. And we will play you something, because that third inning he talked about, we had some fielding stuff. We had some dugout stuff. And thankfully, we had some comeback stuff at the end of that game. We are also going to do, so I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick timeout here. When we come back, we're going to get into what happened in the third inning yesterday of the Cubs-Brewers win. We're also going to listen. Jed Hoyer talked the other day, the Cubs president of baseball operations, some interesting stuff to exactly what John was talking about the Cubs, where they sit now, and what they need to do before the deadline in order to make a run here and not be sellers. Hit and Run here on the Score. Mike Esposito in for Spiegs. We have a great show for you. We'll talk White Sox with Ryan McGuffey at 9:40. Cubs, as we just said, coming back with some Jed Hoyer tape and some dugout stuff from yesterday in Milwaukee. It's Hit and Run on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Here comes the 1-2 to Contreras. A pop fly, shallow center. Might be a tough chance going out. And coming in and dropping the ball is Crow Armstrong as a run scores. Unbelievable. Very tough chance with the infield in. The infielders, Swanson and Horner, had a long way to go out into shallow center. Crow Armstrong called it at the last second, made a sliding try, collided slightly with Horner as the ball hit his glove and hit the ground. Hard to believe what we're seeing in this inning. The ball game is... Here's a grounder back to the mound. They've got the runner in a rundown. Steele running him toward second. Now Horner running him toward third. And they don't get an out. Safe at third is Frelick. Monasterio goes to second. The Cubs just did not execute that properly. And the Brewers have runners at second and third with only one away.
And that was the third inning yesterday up in Milwaukee. And thankfully, the Cubs had come back to win the game. Highlights right here on the Score in the Cubs radio network. Some defensive miscues, although there were no errors charged on either of those plays. The Pete Crow Armstrong ball was given a hit to William Contreras. And Bryce Terang reached on a bunt single, according to the official score. Even though that we heard that was a botched rundown, as a 12U baseball coach, I felt like I was listening to my own game for my kids' team there. But that was not. That was the Cubs. And what we're going to talk about there is what happened with the Cubs yesterday, as they did win 5-3. They came from behind, and they initially, actually, they had the lead, then they got tied, then they got tied again, and then Ian Happ ended it. Not a walk-off, but put the Cubs ahead for good with a two-run shot in the eighth. All of that in a second, but first I want to get to what happened after what we just heard there from Pat and Ron in the third inning. And again, this is Mike Esposito. It's Hit and Run in for Spiegs today. Spiegs has the day off. We are here till 12:35. Cubs baseball comes your way at that time. The series finale up in Milwaukee. So yesterday, after that third inning, Justin Steele, he still has no wins, by the way, here on June 30th, but that is certainly not his fault. He has been pitching phenomenally with an ERA around 2 over 6 starts in June. But Justin Steele, after that third inning, in the dugout, began screaming, quote, "Wake the bleep up," to no one in particular in the dugout, according to Paul Sullivan's article this morning in the Trib, but repeatedly screaming, "Wake the bleep up," talking to himself, I'm sure. We just heard some of the rundown stuff. He was involved in that, but maybe getting a little fire, maybe getting a little inspiration, trying to be a little inspirational to his teammates. And Sean, I know you said, do we have any of the sound surrounding the aftermath of nothing on the TV broadcast, correct?
Nothing on the TV broadcast, but we do have our guys, Pat and Ron, reacting to that a little bit later in the broadcast.
Curveball is down low, but Ron, there was an incident involving Justin Steele. I'm not sure exactly when, maybe about an hour ago, somewhere around the second or third inning.
I think it was the fourth inning when fourth all inning. This stuff happened. Yeah, okay. In the fourth inning, he came off the field.
And we just saw the replay of it, and he was very upset, excuse me, understandably.
Yeah.
The Cubs made some misplays, and there were errors, and here comes the 2-1 pitch, popped up foul, out of play, and he was basically trying to fire up his teammates, yeah. And I kind of like that.
No, absolutely. There comes a time, and I was talking on it last inning, there comes a time where you just had enough, and, you know, it just does. It boils over, and, you know, you play this game, and it's a hard game to play and all those things.
Fly ball left center deep. Back goes Happ with room near the track. The left fielder makes the catch. And that's out number 2. Go ahead, Ron.
Sometimes, you know, every athlete that plays at this level has that burn inside of you, that fight, that creates all that. And sometimes it just gets to the point where that's the end of it. I can't take it anymore, and we're going to fight back. And I think that's what you saw there from Justin Steele. He has been pitching his butt off here as of late. The last month, he hasn't had a bad outing. Does not have a win in the last month. And then things start going south against your rival team that's in first place. That's enough now. Mm-hmm. I've had enough. Mm-hmm. We're going to, it's, everybody has that boiling point. He boiled over, and that's good for him.
Pat and Ron always there for you right here on the Cubs Radio Network and 670 The Score. And Steele said afterwards, and I'm paraphrasing, you know, I kind of got to watch my language. I got, you know, kids watching me and relatives and whatnot that, he doesn't want to be that guy, you know, screaming and dropping F-bombs in the dugout. But, hey, it worked. It was, I don't want to say appropriate, but it was appropriate in a major league dugout setting and just venting his frustration, especially and as it turns out, they would win the game, right? So, but at the time, those were big plays, and that had helped them tie the game. But to Ron's point, and I'm just going to go very quickly, since May 27th, which was also against the Brewers, here's Steele's games. 7 innings, no earned runs. The Cubs lost that game, 5-1. Saturday, June 1st, against the Reds, 5 innings, 1 earned run. The Cubs won that game, but Steele did not factor in the decision. Steele lost this game Friday, June 7th against the Reds. Seven innings, one earned, but three total runs, thanks to errors, of course. And he took the loss in that one because the Cubs lost 3-2, as they did in his next start, which he pitched six shutout innings. But that was not good enough because he didn't take the loss, but the Cubs did because they lost 3-2. That one was Tampa. Two earned in 6 2/3 against the Giants. That was a Cubs victory, but Steele, again, did not factor into it. The Cubs lost to the Giants in his next start, which was, and we'll talk more about Monday night in San Francisco. That'll be for later in the show. But Monday night in San Francisco, he takes a no decision, two earned. He pitched into the eighth, 7 1/3. And the Cubs, as we know, or if you don't remember, I will bring it back to your memory, and you won't like it. But that was the ninth inning blow up. 7 1/3, two earned. The Cubs lost that game. And then yesterday. So that's a really darn good, what is that, seven starts for Justin Steele since May 27th. His ERA is down almost a point and a half in that time. He's pitched great. He's pitched seven-plus innings three of those times. He's pitched into the sixth all of those times. I mean, this is, that's a run right there, folks. I mean, in today's baseball, that's a run. Let's hear from Ian Happ, the hero of yesterday's game.
After the third inning, you know, Justin kind of got emotional. Craig said it's obviously coming from a good place. And kind of, how did you read that moment?
Yeah, guy's competing, wants to win. You know, frustrated with, you know, how he's given up runs there in that situation, and you know, he's given everything he has out there. He's been really good. You know, I don't know how many starts in a row now, but he's been competing, going deep into games, and you know, that's raw emotion. Yeah, I mean, I think anything that is from the heart, and you know, somebody in the heat of competition, I think everybody sees how much he cares, how much he wants to win baseball games, and when he goes out there and competes, you know, it was nice to see.
So there's Ian Happ, the hero of yesterday's game, and Ian Happ, the Cubs and Cubs fans should thank Ian Happ for Thursday's win and for yesterday's win. Of course, others played a part, but hey, when you're struggling to score runs, a two-run homer in the eighth or the tenth is certainly helpful. And on Thursday, the finale in San Francisco, which the Cubs had lost the first three, into the tenth inning, the Cubs, Ian Happ with a two-run shot, giving them a 5-3 margin. That would be the final, but Happ, game-winning RBI there. And then yesterday, almost the exact same scenario, except in the eighth inning and not the tenth. Happ, two-run homer in the eighth yesterday, and we heard that coming into the show. So two huge hits for the Cubs left fielder, and those are the only two wins for the Cubs this week. And Ian Happ factored hugely in both of those, as we just described, but there he was talking about Justin Steele. And the text line, by the way, agrees with Ian Happ. 312-644-6767. If you would like to text us or call us, please do either way at that number. But a texter suggests that the Cubs should show up today wearing t-shirts that say, "Wake the bleep up." Bleep being my insertion there. Team building, use the energy to propel the rest of the year. I mean, listen, I'm sure the guys at Obvious Shirts would be very happy to make those shirts, and I guarantee you that they would get worn. So we'll see if the Cubs get on that. Another texter said the Steele outburst in that game kind of reminds me of what Hayward's speech did in 2016. I mean, albeit different circumstances, but I get what you're trying to say. A little bit less important than 2016, we'll say that. But this texter from 630 goes on to say, "I don't mind that fire at all." I don't either. I don't either. And in fact, Craig Counsell had talked the other day about how, you know, they don't really have that, although he kind of didn't think that was super important that they had, you know, Mr. Fire and Passion guy in the clubhouse, because they really don't have that. But Steele certainly provided that yesterday. And from the 331, how in God's name were the Cubs not charged with errors yesterday? That is a darn good question. I know the official scorers tend to, and they certainly won't tell you this, but they certainly tend to try to maybe give the home team hits. And I guess you could make a case for the PCA drop, whatever you want to call it, to be a hit because it was a tough play. But I don't know. That's a darn good question, 331 texter. And we'll have to page the official scorer at American Family Field there and see what we can figure out. I promised you Jed Hoyer tape. I promise you that we will get to that at the top of the 10 o'clock hour because that's important. We definitely want to get to that as well. 630 texter. We will close this segment with this. Steele just said the same thing. The fans are yelling when they watch the game. Yes, that's true. Hey, we already talked to one of them. John and Logan Square said he was ready to throw his TV off the balcony in that third inning. So I'm glad John's TV survived. Glad we all survived yesterday's Cubs game. And hey, they won the game 5-3. We're going to talk White Sox next when we come back here on Hit and Run. Ryan McGuffey, our buddy from NBC Sports Chicago, will join us and we will talk about the red hot Chicago White Sox. They have won three in a row. Guff will talk about that with us next. It's Mike Esposito. I'm in for Spiegs today. It's Hit and Run on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We're back with more Hit and Run with Mike Esposito on 670 The Score.
I think it's impossible to fully put it out of your mind when you're not playing. When I'm playing, you know, and in my day-to-day routine, when I'm actually working out and stuff, it's pretty easy. But in the downtime is when it gets tough. And, you know, that it's kind of just something that I say to myself, knowing that it's not in my control and that at the end of the day, whatever's supposed to happen is going to happen.
That's Garrett Crochet yesterday on Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haugh talking about trade rumors. And guess what? We got some of those this morning from Bob Nightingale of USA Today. We are going to talk about that right now as we head on out to the Score Hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. We are joined by the very talented and all everything Mr. White Sox, Ryan McGuffey from NBC Sports Chicago. Guff, good morning, my friend. Thank you for jumping on.
Hey, what's up, Espo? Happy to be here, man.
Glad to talk to you, and I'm sure you woke, as we did, to the Garrett Crochet trade rumors, and not surprising trade rumors, we should add, because it's been a not quite secret that this was likely to happen, but Bob Nightingale coming out this morning in USA Today and basically saying that not only are half the teams in the league contacting the White Sox about Crochet, but that this was a bit for me that the Sox quietly engaged in extension talks with him, but with no optimism towards reaching an agreement, which is sadly not a surprise to me.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that Chuck and I have been talking about on the podcast for a couple of weeks. You know, will he be traded? Won't he be traded? Should he be traded? Should he not be traded? I mean, look, like the way I see it, the two of the toughest things to find are a stud ace and a number three hitter gold glove center fielder. And you have two of that's the two things the White Sox have. And obviously the two gigantic commodities for around the league. This is all about timelines. That's all this is. Because I understand why fans and me included would be like, why would you get rid of Garrett Crochet? And it's a valid question, but you have to look at after 2024, the 2 years of control Garrett Crochet has and what the plan is for the Chicago White Sox. And if the plan is not to contend, or you are on, it's not been labeled a rebuild, but I mean, if you look at the way this thing's shaping up, it looks like a rebuild. This is all about kind of the ships passing in the night and being on separate or being on parallel paths and not really meeting at the same time, because the timeline of Garrett Crochet doesn't really line up with when the White Sox next contention window might be. And that's why you try to go and extend him. That makes sense. And if there's no hope to extend him, you have to entertain trade offers. And knowing that it looks to be a lesser trade deadline in terms of the type of players that could be on the market, specifically pitchers, you know, Garrett Crochet is kind of Pedro Grifol has said it, you know, he's kind of a unicorn in a sense that there's not a lot of Garrett Crochet stories out there where you have a guy that has 73 career innings pitched, never been a starter, and then is going to be an all-star and lead the American League in strikeouts. I mean, there's really not a book on how to handle something like this. And that's where, if you're a team trading for Garrett Crochet, you have to obviously look at those innings and say, well, what can you give us in August, September, October? And that's why I think a team like the Dodgers, the Yankees, the Braves, teams that are already, or the Phillies, teams that are already World Series favorites, do they make a play on a Garrett Crochet and say, look, this is a play for us to win the World Series now and tomorrow, knowing that he's got a lower salary in the next 2 years. So the White Sox should be asking for the farm. They should get that, I think, from a Garrett Crochet. And it's unfortunate because he's been such a great story, not just in Chicago, but in all of baseball. And I think it makes a lot of sense. If the White Sox do trade him, you can certainly see why.
Absolutely. No, and that's how I keep looking at this too, Guff, is you take your fan, sunglasses off and you just look logically at this. The Sox have the worst record in baseball. They are not in a contention window. This guy makes no money. He's had a wonderful first half. And you can get, as you said, and they should be asking for the, earth, sun, moon, and stars, and they will get that if they are able to deal him, and if assuming, health, of course, which knock on wood remains. But in a rebuild, and when you have 24 wins here on June 30th, I mean, this could really accelerate that rebuild, can it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you're looking, a lot of people are like, well, why would you want to trade Garrett Crochet? Because you're looking to get Garrett Crochet in return eventually. Well, yeah, that's what we're talking about with timelines here. I mean, if you can find a younger Garrett Crochet type, or, I mean, look, the White Sox, the hitting is where the Sox have a lot of promising pitchers. They really don't have much in the offense department. So if you can, I don't know if Luis Robert will be traded. I mean, looking at Bob Nightingale's piece saying that, just the way he's performed with the 2 month injury, I really think put a dent in the idea of trading Luis Robert. Maybe that's something you look at in the offseason, but you need to rebuild that offensive cupboard because it's pretty bare and empty. But, looking at Crochet, this is what it'll be great to see. Like, who's going to play the desperate card first? Which team is going to say, okay, enough's enough. We have injuries, or we're in a race here. We need to get that guy so this other team doesn't get that guy, and we'll give you what you need in order to get that deal done. Because I think everybody's sitting here going, okay, we're a month from the deadline, and you're waiting. And this has been me too. I'm like, I'm waiting for the signs of fatigue from Garrett Crochet.
Mm-hmm.
And then each start he goes out there, he's doing something better than he did before. I mean, he looks stronger at this point in the season than he's looked at any other point. And, early in the season when he had that rough spot, it looked like, okay, well, this is going to be part of the rebuild that Garrett Crochet is learning to be a starter on the fly. And it's just not the case. He overcame that, and he's just been absolutely lights out, regardless of whoever team, whatever offense, where he's pitching, when he's pitching, it doesn't seem to matter. That's where, if I were a team that was World Series or bust mentality, I would be lining up, because if that's what the goal is, and that's why I mentioned those big dogs at the top, mm-hmm. the Dodgers, the Yankees, the Braves, the Phillies, because you're not really, yes, you care about your prospects, but if it's World Series or bust mentality, you're willing to let go of 3-4 years from now in order to win the World Series now. I mean, look at, especially the Dodgers, who've been chasing with the amount of money they spent, $1.2 billion in the offseason. I don't think they're worried about a 19, 20, 21-year-old kid or kids in order to get that done.
No, and Garrett Crochet's salary is a rounding error in their accounting books, I think, at this point, too. No, and I mean, listen, Baltimore is in first place in the East by a game. Yep. The Yankees, I mean, the nice thing with the wild card, and I guess you could see this both ways, is that almost everybody is still, they still have some hope or another. Obviously, your World Series favorites are pretty clear at this point, but there's tons of teams still in the mix here, which is why, actually, ironically, that there are so few automatic sellers, and the White Sox are one of them, and that puts Crochet, there's not starting pitching like this on that market.
Yeah, the Orioles, the Orioles are a great example. Last year, it made zero sense to me that they weren't calling for Dylan Cease at the deadline, knowing that they had the offense to get there, and then what happened in the playoffs? They didn't have pitching. They got swept, or they were in and out after a 100-win season. And you look at the Orioles and what Corbin Burnes has given them. Could you imagine pairing Garrett Crochet with Corbin Burnes and whatever you get from Crochet? I mean, even if Garrett Crochet can give you 2 innings in the bullpen in October, that's nasty. So the Orioles would be a team, I mean, certainly from an offensive standpoint, their prospects and even guys at the major league level who have not quite busted out yet, you know, you're not going to get Jackson Holliday, but they have a loaded system, a loaded roster of young guys that I think would be very attractive. That's a team that could line up very well with the White Sox and Garrett Crochet. So it'll be like, that's what I'm talking about. Which team is going to say enough's enough, play the card? You know, A.J. Preller of the Padres, he seems to be the guy who always is playing that card.
Always.
And
yep.
So they're probably a team that I know, you know, there's been some mentions of San Diego and Garrett Crochet lining up. And I just think that there's going to be an A.J. Preller type that calls Chris Getz and says, I'm not hanging up the phone until we get the deal done. The question is when and who and what the White Sox will get in return, because it does seem, you know, you look at it, take away Bob's piece this morning, the momentum certainly seemed to be building towards this moment. And then you add in that piece this morning that kind of confirms that half the league's, look, I'd say more than 15 teams are interested in Garrett Crochet.
Right.
There's probably five that can actually line up and get the deal done. So the question is, over the next 4 weeks, who is that team?
Talking to Ryan McGuffey from NBC Sports Chicago here on Hit and Run on the Score. Espo in for Spiegs. Guff, and hey, the White Sox are hot. Let's call it right there. They've won three in a row. And listen, I kid a little bit, but it's nice to see the bats pop off yesterday. Luis Robert with the long bomb. And maybe, just maybe, I mean, he's been in a bit of a funk since coming back from injury. You mentioned it during your last answer. I think, you know, he's had a difficult time, or it was a long layoff, and now he's trying to get himself back into playing every day. But, you know, maybe this is a sign of some kind of resurgence for Robert, and certainly offensively it was nice to see the White Sox have one where they can kind of cruise control there at the end.
Yeah, I mean, we're getting a little bit of a taste. I mean, look, the Rockies are equally as awful.
Yes.
And the White Sox, from a talent standpoint, it's not a very talented roster. It's a top-heavy talent in the White Sox, but they're better than the Colorado Rockies. I mean, the Rockies are absolutely awful and going nowhere fast. And we've seen little bursts this weekend of what you thought the White Sox might be over the last couple of years. You know, the ability to put a bunch of runs on the board quick. I mean, would they have six in the eighth last night or yesterday?
Yep.
You know, you were just kind of waiting for it was what, 3-0. And it just felt like, okay, like this doesn't feel like the Colorado Rockies are putting anything away here. And then all of a sudden it's homers from Robert. You're getting, you know, Paul DeJong, and then you get the sixth run. They're doing it in different ways too. You're not just seeing power. I mean, this team has lacked so much power over the last three seasons. They've been one of the worst power teams, worst power hitting teams in all of baseball. So I don't put too much stock into it. I know you're not either with it being the Rockies, but they haven't won four games in a row all year. So this is kind of a high watermark moment for the White Sox if they can get a sweep of the Colorado Rockies today after that 1-0 win in the makeup game on Thursday against Atlanta. So, you know, look, it is what it is. Like, they're not, it's nice to see wins. I'll say that.
Yes.
And there's some story, like Drew Thorpe pitching on Friday night.
Yep.
He's fun to watch. I mean, that guy looks like he's got the composure and makeup of a 30-year-old veteran. So there's some stories. Jonathan Cannon is a story. And obviously we talked about Crochet at length. I mean, there are some things to watch in a lost season here. And there'll be more. I think after the trade deadline and the White Sox move a lot of these pieces, you're going to see more of these guys from Double-A. You're going to see more of this, you know, these promising young guys that everybody's been talking about, Birmingham all year. So there are things to be excited about, but they are a long way away from saying we're, you know, contending for a wild card spot.
Well, and two things off of your answer, because I had actually noted that too, to talk to you about, is that if nothing else, watching the young pitching is something. If you're a White Sox fan and you want to watch the games, and you obviously know that this year is not going anywhere, you can watch those games excitedly and watch Thorpe or Cannon or Fetty or Crochet or whomever. They have a number of those guys to trot out there. That is certainly stuff that you can build on for the future.
100%. I mean, and you might not always like the results. I mean, Jonathan Cannon goes, 8 2/3, almost throws a complete game shutout, and then follows it up with a clunker the next day. And people are like, here it is, one step forward, two steps back. I don't look at that at all. Keep running these guys out there. I mean, part of pitching into the ninth inning is learning how to maintain and build upon those starts. And we see it all the time. So, Nick Mastrini has not been as bright of a spot as you'd want him to be, maybe. But a lot of these guys are learning. People forget, that Lucas Giolito had a 6-something ERA and then turned it around, but he learned at the big league level. I think you're going to see a lot of that type of stuff here in the second half of the White Sox season. Like, after the trades, a lot of times you just kind of want to write these teams off and say, oh my gosh, there's nothing to watch. And I just don't think that's the case here. There's not a lot of the supporting cast isn't strong. I don't think the offense is going to give you much the rest of the year. But there are a lot of young arms, not just in the rotation to come, but in the bullpen too. I think you're going to see some guys probably be dealt in that bullpen that give other guys opportunities. You're going to see more of like the Jordan Leisures and the Jared Schusters. And while that might not be, sexy names right now, I think there's something there. And certainly from an every fifth day standpoint right now, Drew Thorpe is a guy I usually tweet it every time he pitches that, hey man, like, this guy's fun to watch. You can get locked in and watch him pitch. That was his first start at home on Friday night. And he just was locked in. I mean, he was legit upset about giving up the 2-run homer. And he looked like, he'd given up a 2-run homer in the ALCS the way he came off the mound and was dejected in the dugout. And the White Sox offense was able to respond and pick him up there. But, I mean, he had given up two hits, and one being a 2-run homer. And the way he responded, I love to see that. I love to see, like, that's the maturation of these young guys that we're going to see down the stretch. So I don't think it's, like, I don't think this is all lost, because I just think there are some stuff to watch. It's more about how the White Sox add and supplement and complement the rest of these guys as they go forward in this, rebuild 2.0 or whatever we're calling it.
Right. Yeah. Well, one thing's for sure, Guffin, we really appreciate your time this morning here on Hit and Run. It's going to be a very interesting next month or so leading into deadline, because I think you're going to see a ton of moves. That's my, just based on what's on this roster, but it's definitely going to be interesting, and we really appreciate you joining us.
I always love being on with you. I'll give you an over-under. 6.5 players moved. Where you like?
I'm taking the over. I'm going over on it.
I am too.
All right, Ryan. Thanks for joining us, Guff. Appreciate it.
Anytime.
All right. That's Ryan McGuffey, NBC Sports Chicago. And it's always great talking with Guff, and great talking to White Sox with him. You can hear him here on The Score on occasion filling in on any of the shows, but talking White Sox with him right now. And Sox fans, we will definitely get back to you as to what the White Sox are looking at here with the Garrett Crochet trade rumors, and Luis Robert was mentioned, and just the number of players that they have that are likely or very possibly to be dealt ahead of the trade deadline at the end of July. Coming up next, I promised you Jed Hoyer tape. I will give you Jed Hoyer tape from Milwaukee. It's Mike Esposito. I'm in for Spiegs. This is Hit and Run, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.